And too, tell something about that. That would be tape two, side one. National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Program, November the 18th, 1987. I am Mildred J. Menlow with my partner, Ruth Weiner. We are interviewing Dorothy Binstock at her home. Dorothy, I know that you have been involved in many community projects that you have initiated. We're interested in the Women in the Urban Crisis, which was a project that you had initiated. Would you tell us something about it?
Yes, I brought the idea from our National B'nai B'rith Women in Washington. The idea of women meeting together and working together to meet the common needs. At that time, groups were formed throughout the country. Ours happened to have been the most successful. This was the first time in our city that welfare mothers and junior league mothers got together to discuss the needs and to try to find solutions. We found at that time that housing was a very large factor, discrimination in housing, and also the need for lunches in the schools for needy children. And so we began with those two projects. They grew and expanded, and the group met every month. We had a young attorney, Michael Lewick, who evolved a set of bylaws for us. We found women meeting women in different stratas of our society was in itself an intergroup experience. 15 years after the initiation, we found that there was not as much attention as reflected in the attendance of the groups that came. Perhaps we met a need, and it was time to disband. And it seemed to be petering out. Frieda Shapiro then was the chairman of Women in the Urban Crisis, and I felt that if Frieda could not bring it together, and if we could not get enough money to continue Women in the Urban Crisis, at best we had only a part-time secretary some of the time. Corporation seemed to have lost interest in that particular project, and since not enough interest was evidenced, Frieda and I and the executive board decided to disband Women in the Urban Crisis. We would meet as individuals, but not as a group.
As an individual, did you organize the series of Catholic Jewish workshops as a result of this with the Bishop Wright?
Yes. That was done in cooperation.
Became Cardinal Wright.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That was done in cooperation. With the Pittsburgh Catholic Diocese and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. The Anti-Defamation League is the educational arm of B'nai B'rith, and this league had the expertise and the staff to assist us with this. Bishop Wright at that time and Bishop McDowell of the Catholic school system were extremely interested and helpful. And so the two groups joined, and we had a series of four Catholic-Jewish dialogues. One of them was, we were joined by the National Council of Christians and Jews, the National Conference of Christians and Jews. We evolved into a study group where for four consecutive Tuesdays, Catholic teachers would come after school at 4 o'clock to Carlo College, and we would have speakers on various aspects of Judaism and Catholicism. This was quite successful. Bishop Wright gave it a great deal of attention, And we had priests and nuns from the tri-state area come to these intergroup conferences. We feel that we made a great inroad in getting to know each other, getting to know our differences and our similarities. When Bishop Wright became a cardinal, of course, and left the city, we found that the great interest that we had at the beginning was lagging, and so we have not continued them. We hope that, and other organizations have picked this up. In the window of the Pittsburgh Catholic Diocese is a huge picture, an oil painting of Cardinal Wright, which the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith presented to the Catholic Diocese.
Oh, where is that?
In the window on 4th Avenue, where the Pittsburgh Catholic Diocese. And I must admit that my attention was diverted to the overall picture of B'nai B'rith women and the Anti-Defamation League.
When did this happen? Do you recollect about when that was?
I could look, and I guess before you leave, yes.
Now, that was part of your work with the Anti-Defamation League.
And B'nai B'rith Women.
B'nai B'rith Women.
I was the Operation Poverty Chairman for a while, you would be interested to note. And part of my anti-poverty chairmanship was Women in the Urban Crisis.
Some of the other things that you did with ADL, the conversations on the Middle East.
Yes. At that time, I was the National Anti-Defamation League Chairman of B'nai B'rith Women. Each time I evolved a project was in keeping with what I was doing. And we felt that our women across the country, our Jewish women, did not know enough about the Middle East. And so we made up a kit and traveled to 15 cities, talking to Jewish women of all organizations on conversations on the Middle East. And where necessary, we had speakers and specialists come in.
Jewish organizations?
Yes, for conversations on the Middle East, we did this with the Jewish organizations, because we felt our women had expressed the fact that they, at that time, 15 or almost 20 years ago, our women were not as well versed on Israel as they wanted to be, and certainly not on the problems of the Middle East. And we felt that if we gave them information with the material that was evolved especially for women.
Can you tell me when that was?
That was Women Urban Crisis was 15 years ago. That was 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, your involvement with women in so many organizations and with so many problems and projects gave you pause to think about the equal rights. And you became very active in that area as well.
B'nai B'rith Women was the first Jewish organization to come out for ERA. We had a lot of involvement in Washington and around the country. We have about 120,000 women, and they're made up into regions. And we have a pulse of what is necessary in relation to public affairs. In recent years, public affairs has become one of the cornerstones of our organization to meet the needs of our women. They really wanted this. Most recent, the Bork nomination, we again were the first Jewish women's organization to come out against Judge Bork. Our women seem to need and want this kind of direction. And so we formed a committee in Washington called Public Affairs, a department, I should say. And this department has grown by leaps and bounds because the women are so interested.
Department of
Public Affairs. And from their the Civil Restoration Act right now is taking a lot of our attention. Equal pay for equal work is also something that we're working with.
But Civil Restoration Act?
Yes,
what is that?
The Civil Rights Act.
Civil Rights Act.
Yes, but this is the restoration of that act.
I see what you're saying. All right.
And we call it, and we say, don't set the clocks back, don't go backwards. And we have a project called Don't Set the Clocks Back.
You were on the National Council, were you not, the Advisory Council? Women's Advisory Council, the Office of Equal Economic Opportunity.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago. That was under Nixon.
Yes.
That was an interesting. 22 women were chosen around the country. We were each given an assignment. My assignment happened to be the Blackfeet Indian Reservation in Montana. We went in Washington, we set out the parameters of our responsibilities, and then we were each given an assignment, and I proceeded to Montana, to the Indian Reservation. We were to give our impression and what we thought could, what help was needed. It was a fascinating experience for me, as you can well imagine, to be on this reservation for 1 week. Again, we made friends with Indian women who were interested in helping themselves.
These Indian women, how much education had they had?
Outside of their few leaders, none. The situation has improved in that some of the children now are encouraged to go to other schools, schools other than the reservation. And there's a high school program and there's an advanced program. The mores of the Indian family are very different than what we're accustomed to. The men will take their wives to a hospital for surgery, but they will not go to the hospital with them when they deliver a child, even if there's trouble. I found a great malaise in the Indian community. People, men sitting on sidewalks all day long, smoking, and hardly going to the government agencies unless they went regularly for need, but other than that, they didn't involve themselves in any way. They were given some sort of medical care, some sort of eye care, but they never took the initiative. But a few of their leaders, primarily several women leaders of the Indian, this particular reservation, were instrumental in taking the Indian problem to Washington. And at that time, Mr. Harris was running for a state senator, and then I think he ran even for president of the United States, and his wife, who was an Indian, was instrumental in bringing the needs of the Indian to the American government. I still do not feel that the American government gives as much attention to the Indians as they should be.
But they have done something about educating.
Yes.
And food needs, are they being met in any way?
It's getting better than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the Indians have a feeling, they don't mind if their children intermarry, because they say if you have a drop of Indian blood in you, then you're an Indian, which to me has decimated their people, because that's not quite so. If they, so many of them marry out of the tribe, they don't come back to help their Indian brothers and sisters. But they, the word malaise keeps coming to my mind, because that's what I see there. I was greeted in a national park that overlooked the Indian reservation. The park had the lush greenery, and the Indian reservation had scrub land. And when we went to the top, we were greeted by a beautiful, tall, blonde Wellesley student. We were not greeted by Indian young folks. And so my contribution, I felt, to this Office of Economic Opportunity was to call attention to the fact that there were certainly trainable young Indian boys and girls who could do things other than just be kitchen help. The promise was made that this would be looked into not just from reservation to reservation, but as a national project to encourage those in charge to make sure that the Indian boys and girls were given some visibility. They were always in the kitchen, and they when you went to the hotels, you never saw an Indian working there. So I felt that my contribution was to call attention to that fact. And the fact, prenatal care. I don't think I mentioned to you that I was National Operations Store Chairman, which is a prenatal care program all around the country, which today, because of the new emphasis, is even more important than ever. B'nai B'rith Women does this with the March of Dimes, has done this for 20 years.
This prenatal program was also called
Operation Stork, B'nai B'rith Women and Operation Stork. Prenatal care, children having children. We have catchy titles so that more people will be interested. March of Dimes has judged us to have the most successful program, and it continues, fortunately or unfortunately. Uh-huh. The need is there, and the program has expanded. And at every national convention, every 2 years, we have a great program with March of Dimes.
Your concern for women has led you to the United Nations. And do you want to discuss your particular position on that? It was the United Nations Decade on Women, I believe.
Yes. That was in relation to Zionism is racism, United Nations.
What and was this?
That, exactly, but 6 years ago, you recall when we had such a big problem and such great concern. We hope that now, after all these years, finally, maybe, this will be stricken for the records of the United Nations. But my answer to that, as president of B'nai B'rith Women, was to call together the 12 presidents of all major Jewish women's organizations, representing 1.5 million women, call together the 12 presidents to Washington to work with them. No single organization taking credit for it, just it was a real group.
In collective.
Collective experience, a real group experience. And we prepared the women who were going to the next conference to be better prepared. There had to be a lot of groundwork laid, and a lot of experts were called in to give the women the answers, because the first United Nations End Decade Conference was held in Mexico, and our women, all women of all organizations, were totally unprepared. None of us knew the answers. Our women were in shock when this Zionism is racism came out of that conference. The next one was in Copenhagen 5 years later, always counting end decade. There our women were better prepared. We had gone together to the Senate, we'd gone together to the President, and our women were better prepared. But Nairobi was the end decade conference, and in Nairobi, the tide was turned in our favor. The United Nations has a lot of difficult situations. For example, I brought 800 B'nai B'rith women from a convention to the United Nations, and Yehuda Blum was to be our speaker, and it was a rainy day, and the women came on buses, and they all trooped in, and Ambassador Blum said, "I honestly don't know why you're here. The United Nations is such a terrible place." an old woman looked to me as president, and I said, Mr. Ambassador, we are here not to honor the United Nations, but to honor you and the State of Israel. This was taken back, and I received some very interesting messages afterwards. But we keep preparing our women for what women have to do now. They have to be much more knowledgeable about what is taking world events. And it's just, and I don't mean to infer that the other B'nai B'rith Women's projects are not important. They obviously are. I don't know if you noticed, but right across the street from where you live, Mildred,
yes,
there's a sign that says B'nai B'rith Hillel, Jewish University.
Yep.
Now, we have 400 of those around the world. We're the largest employer of rabbis in the world. Because, with the exception of two, all of the directors are rabbis. So I don't mean to negate the Hillel Project or the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization Project or our community service, our work with the volunteers, equally as important as each era demands a different kind of emphasis.
A different approach.
And a different approach.
To new problems.
Yes. And so we had to go into this field of public affairs as detailed as I have said to you, at the same time not negating the responsibilities or the finances to our
original
projects.
Charter.
Yes, the original charter, original projects. We have a home in Israel called the B'nai B'rith Women's Children's Home in Israel. It was founded, I'm pleased to tell you, by at the suggestion of Henrietta Zold, who came to B'nai B'rith Women and said, we have done so much, we're doing so much, we cannot take care of the children of the Holocaust who are coming without parents, who are not mentally retarded, but who are emotionally disturbed. And since the time of the Holocaust, this home has been supported entirely by B'nai B'rith Women. We send the bulk of our money to Israel, to this B'nai B'rith Women's Children's Home in Israel, which has three parts to it. The home itself has students from the ages of 5 to 14. It is judged in Israel and in the United States when our director, Dr. Ezekiel Cohn, comes to Pittsburgh, all the mental health, comes to the United States, all the mental health institutions want to hear his papers on how, with loving care and no drugs, he has had such success. Thousands of young people have gone back into the Israeli society. At the age of 13, they have bar mitzvahs. Many of them presently are grandchildren of Holocaust survivors and children from the Middle Eastern countries. They come with no idea of the language or family involvement. The parents are so frustrated, and they have many, many children, that these children have developed severe emotional problems. They're very bright and they're very talented, but they have severe emotional problems. And so this home, after their bar mitzvah, a year later, they go to what's known as a group house, which is in the center of Jerusalem, which is our home, incidentally, is in Beit Dagon, which is on the hills of Jerusalem. But we bring them down into the city so they can get adjusted to ordinary life. And while they're in the group house, which is supported, incidentally, by the B'nai B'rith Women of Canada, the B'nai B'rith Women of the United States support the Children's Home, which is a large facility. They're taught a trade, or they're sent to a school, depending upon the ability and the emotional stability. The Israeli government has been giving us teachers, because the project has grown so much that the $3.5 million that we send every year to this home simply does not meet the needs of the home. It's almost a one-on-one relationship with the students and the help at the home. From there, those who are ready go into an apartment the group house is a small institution. They go into an apartment for apartment experiences and living. There they go into the Army.
And are they emotionally stable enough?
70% are completely cured. Yeah, which
a marvelous record.
It's a wonderful record, and it's a wonderful project. We raise the bulk of our money by appealing to our members about the children's home. We have pamphlets, films, little drama presentations, and many of us. The Neighborhood Women uses its past presidents in a very interesting way. We are sent in some ways to be troubleshooters, and in some ways to promote the program of the Neighborhood Women. So many of us speak around the around our areas on the children's home. And all of us have been there many times and have a great feel for it.
I know there is a fundraising campaign afoot right now.
Yes.
I know I received a call the other day.
Yes, there is. There is indeed. Now, Pittsburgh, for 3 or 4 years, had children's home functions. Helen Oringer was the first honoree, Becky Feinberg the second, and the third was Sonia Levinson. At the moment, for this year, there is not a children's home function, but a children's home appeal instead. And next year, I think we will go back to the function, which... but, you know, we call upon the same women for so many things. And where do you get... where are the honorees? You know, Helen Oringer and Becky and Sonia have always been contributors to our children's home, and we felt very secure in asking them and in their accepting. But we are trying. And small communities like Akron had a magnificent... children's home function this year. The bigger cities have bigger functions. New York and California have. It's like what we used to call donor luncheons. They're children's home luncheons, and that's in addition to the donor luncheons. But you can tell from the order in which I'm telling you this that each chairmanship that I had a different emphasis. Which was interesting. I've belonged, of course, to every Jewish organization in the city, but I feel that this organization, through the diversity of it, has met my needs to serve in the community.
That's one of the questions I wanted to ask. What first directed you to B'nai B'rith of all the organizations?
Just a little membership tea during the war. At that time, we were asked to roll bandages and to man the USO service centers and sell American bonds. We in every bank in the city, we had a little table of two B'nai B'rith women selling United States bonds. And we went from there to a nationwide veterans project where we assessed each woman a certain amount of money plus her time to bring comfort to the veterans. We bought wheelchairs, the women knitted Afghans. The project is still in existence because there's still many veterans in hospitals, unfortunately. And we still have a cadre of interested women in each city. In fact, when Frieda Reinhardt just passed away last year, she left a special amount of money for the B'nai B'rith Women's Veterans Project because she always worked at Aspinwall. And she used to go there every Tuesday for years and years. And we have a group of women.
I was familiar with your work at Aspinwall because a very dear friend of ours was the pathologist at the hospital there. And I wonder if you would speak about their religious holidays where your women substitute.
Oh, I'm glad to do that because our women substitute Easter and Christmas time.
Right.
And they come with their families. They not only bring treats for the veterans and relieve the personnel, but the children of the veterans have a little special program for them, refreshments and coloring books and so on, so that the mother can really be with the father. And this project we have people who really aren't interested in anything else except the veterans. And many of our women go. They help shave the patients, write letters. But that project, after the war, diminished somewhat, but never it never died out. We never permitted it to. We just didn't give it quite as much financial aid because in the interim came the children's home and the other projects. But our women have, we've been recognized nationally by the Veterans Association as the, a sustaining program throughout all the years. And then as so we went away from the Banners rolling in the bonds to the veterans, to anti-Semitism. And that's where I became involved with the Anti-Defamation League, which in itself is one of the world's outstanding human relations agencies, there's no question. I am currently the national vice chairman. I do not ever anticipate taking the chairmanship for two reasons. First, my age, and secondly, you really have to have a lot of contacts in Washington and around the world. And we have men who really have these contacts and who have opened doors to the White House. This is a very interesting. It's a project of B'nai B'rith, and there's B'nai B'rith, and there's B'nai B'rith women. We're all.
End of side one, tape two, continued on side two.
And then the.